came in. And so I'm here to tell you a little bit of my experience, strength, and hope. And, you know, I like to spend more time on the hope part of it, because I know for me now that, you know, what it was like, you know, there's a lot of different stories that I've heard. And I think a lot of it seems to stem from, you know, no self-esteem. My life was hopeless. You know, I just, I was always lost. So, but I like to tell you a little bit about myself. And so I grew up in Montreal, and I was born December 1964. So I'm going to be 51 this year. And it took me a long time to find these rooms. And I look at some of the young people, and I just go, good for you for being here. And, you know, that it didn't take that long. You know, so for me, growing up, though, I always, I don't know how to describe it, but I always felt like I never fit in anywhere. I didn't have any friends, and my family was what I would like to say is dysfunctional. My parents were both from Germany, and they came to Canada in search of a better life, and it didn't happen. They, you know, they divorced when I was three, and I have two older brothers, but they're a lot older, and when I came along, it was kind of that, you know, I was that accident. And unfortunately, I'm the spitting image of my dad. You know, he's tall, blonde, you know, typical German. And my mother's short and dark. So every time she looked at me, you know, she just wanted to, like, spit on me. I think she was just, you know, there was definitely no love in my house growing up. And, you know, I knew that I never wanted to be home. So growing up, you know, kind of doing my own thing all through elementary school. You know, my mom was working, so I was kind of left to take care of myself. And I always seemed to find trouble. I don't know how, you know, or it found me. But still not fitting in. No friends. I was very tall. Go figure. You know, very tall as even a small kid, like a young kid. And so people just didn't know how to approach me. You know, I was like a giant to them. And I think I kind of took on this approach that it was like a disability. I just, you know, anyways, that was just my take on it. But when I finally started to fit in was when I went to high school. And I started meshing with, you know, people that were kind of like me. It wasn't the in crowd. I wasn't the brain. You know, I was more the sports person. And I got pulled into basketball. And, you know, go figure. But with that came parties and alcohol. And I was 12 when I took my first drink, and I don't really remember it. I just remember the feeling, how you know, you hear that it felt so good from the moment it touched my lips all the way down. You know, it was, I hate to say it, but I think it was like baby duck or something terrible back then. That's what they had. You know, it was baby duck or beer. And I felt part of something. And, you know, it took me. The drink took me. I felt like I found the solution then. And little did I know it wasn't. But, you know, I put my addiction before everything in my life, though. When that started, you know, the parties started, going to dances, and it was always about drinking to get drunk. And back then, there was no, you know, ID or anything. I went to a dépanneur, and you know, in Montreal, and you got alcohol. So, and there was always alcohol at home, so there was never, you know, how do I find my next drink? It was always there. And I didn't realize, one of my first sponsors had said to me, Christine, your first drink actually kicked in the allergy, because as soon as alcohol hit my body, I never wanted to stop. And I didn't understand that at first, but I'll get into the allergy in just a few minutes. But so, you know, I'm happy-go-lucky drinking, doing my own thing, and but I always put addiction in front of everything else. So, you know, it had to be with certain people at a certain place, and anyways, I graduated somehow, I had an opportunity to move to California. So I moved to Los Angeles, and through my lifetime, people had said, "Oh my God, Christine, you make such a great model," and I'm like, "Yep, that's why I'm going to Los Angeles, and people will notice me," you know. But it's funny how people know when you have a drinking problem. You know, I'm trying to get a job, and people are saying, "No, thank you, no, thank you. You know, you need to stop drinking." I'm like, "Oh, okay, I can do that." And you need to lose some weight. And I'm like, "Oh, okay, I can do that, because I'm a people pleaser. You know, I will do anything for everybody else." So, you know, my addictions are like a shelf in front of me. And so I put up the alcohol, and out came my eating disorder. And so I stopped eating. And, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, it's really the same thing. It's really just the same thing. I was smoking at the time, and, you know, it didn't matter. But I didn't know. I had no idea. So, you know, it didn't work out there, and so what do? I do another cure, and a geographical cure, and I go to Toronto. And the only problem is that, you know, I have to take me with me. So, you know, and everybody's heard that. It's like, so I'm running away from something that I still don't know what I'm running away from, to something I have no idea what I'm running to, but I'm taking me with me. And, you know, basically the same thing. Drinking came up, and, you know, the best thing that came out of that was I met my husband in Toronto, and I thought, that's what I need to do, is to get married. That's the right thing. You know, little did I know from doing the steps, though, that the problem's my thinking. So, you know, like I said, so I got married, and again, just havoc, you know, through the beginning. It's just, you know, I'm not eating, I'm drinking, I'm shopping, I'm, you know, controlling, I'm just all these things. I'm just such a mess, and I was always, why does my husband stay with me, right? I tried to push him away many times, believe me, you know. But anyways, he ended up staying with me, and we had 3 kids, and, you know, I was that perfect doting mother, because I am an extremist. And I have a lot of isms, so, you know, I do something. I'm either all in or all out, so, and that's the drinking, too. I'm either, you know, drinking my face off or not, you know. But I wasn't a day-to-day drinker until, I'm going to say, about 5 years ago. So what happened with me was, you know, I was that social drinker for most of my life. You know, when I drank, though, it was always about getting drunk. And, little did I know, it was a progressive disease, and it says it right in the big book that it just keeps getting worse. And I guess I crossed that line from social drinker to alcoholic, and it became a daily thing. And I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. I wasn't hurting anybody, and little did I know, I was hurting everybody around me. And so my kids are, you know, they're all in their 20s. And they stopped talking to me. They stopped wanting to spend time with me. And my husband's saying, you know, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? You know, I'm treating him like crap. I'm treating them like crap. And I'm like, you know, leave me alone. I'm not hurting anybody. So, you know, he was sleeping in the other bedroom. We're married like 20-some years, and, you know, he wouldn't leave, though, because he knew that I would either end up killing myself or killing someone or doing something stupid. Because when I drank towards the end, I did crazy, crazy, crazy things. And, you know, people say, what happens when you drink alcohol, Christina? It's like, well, let's see. I sleep with your husband, and I burn the neighbor's house down, you know? Because I'm just doing crazy things. I don't know who I am, because that morning I say I'm not going to drink. And, you know, Mom, can you pick me up at a party? You know, I don't want to drink. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to drink today. And then I go, oh, no, I'll just have one. I'll just have one. And then by the time they call me at midnight, I'm drunk, and they're pissed off at me and everything. And, you know, it sets that whole ball rolling. So I didn't realize, though. I did not realize that it's the first drink. Because so many times I'd say, I'm just going to have 4. Or my husband, when we'd go out for dinner, he'd say, okay, Christine, just have 2 glasses of wine. I'm like, okay, I can do this. I can do it. You know, and after the first one, I'm already that, like it says in the big book, that restless, irritable discontent. I'm already, like, really angry and, like, you know, trying to control it. And by the time the second one comes along, I'm like, I'm ripping my husband's head off. I may as well be drinking. And so I couldn't control it. But what happened with me was that I just kept drinking, not listening to anybody, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, it went from a couple of glasses of wine to a couple of bottles to, well, maybe if I do hard stuff first. And I was just so confused. I was so confused. And then alcohol just stopped working for me. And I was in so much pain that I couldn't describe it to my husband. And it wasn't until I hit my bottom one day and I drank crazy. I was in a bar and I was like, I said, I'm done. I have no purpose in life anymore and I'm done. And I almost got hit by a car, but I hit my head hard and I had a concussion. And I think that was May of 2013 and I knew I needed help. And I had tried psychiatrists, I had tried treatment, smart recovery. Nothing stuck. Nothing stuck. And so I came to AA by myself, and I had no idea. No idea. I was so full of fear coming here. I had no idea, though. But in Orleans, I went to my first meeting, and I felt at home, and people understood me. And I can't explain it to you. I don't know. I just had this feeling of, like, finally, finally. And I don't know why, or, you know, I just knew I was in the right place. And so it started for me. My AA journey started for me. But, you know, I really didn't want to be there. You know, I was typical, coming in a little bit later, you know, leaving a little early and not really wanting to socialize because I don't really like people, you know. And it's funny, though, the world's full of people. I don't like you. But I didn't know, though, it's because I really don't like me either. So, but I did. I started coming to meetings, and, you know, I did a lot of meetings, actually. But I didn't realize that the triangle in AA is the recovery, unity, and service. And I was just in fellowship. I was just in unity. So I'm just sitting in a chair. I'm doing a little bit of service. Somebody's like, Christine, you'll be a really good chairperson. I'm like, all right, promotion. They said, see that chair? Go pick it up, put it over there. I'm like, oh, ego, right? So, but I didn't know. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to be okay. But guess what? After 6 months, just sitting in a chair, I relapsed. And I've yet to hear somebody say, that was the best relapse ever. Because for me, it started off, like it says, I, you know, sort of controlled it, and then it just nosedived. And I was right back or even worse where I was before. So I did what was suggested. I latched on. It was December 19th, 2013 is my sober date. So I'm like a year and 9 months now. And the Alcathon actually kept me sober. And I met a ton of people there that just said, just keep coming back, Christine, just stay, you know, because I didn't know what to do. I'm like, I have no idea that where it says in the big book, the doctor's opinion is that I have an obsession of the mind, which is my thinking, Christine's thinking, and I have an allergy, and which is when my body takes alcohol into it, it has an abnormal reaction, and I want more. And I just typically, I have a disease of more. I want more candy. I want more, you know, cake. I want more booze. I want everything more. And so, you know, I was confused, though. I'm like, I don't understand the allergy. Don't understand. I don't sneeze. You know, like, what do you mean? It's like, it's just an abnormal reaction. So I said, oh, okay. But what happens when I stop drinking is that I'm left with my thinking. And again, I had no idea until I finally latched on to a sponsor. And my sponsor, Ron, lives in Vancouver, and it's a really long story how I got to be with him, but he works for me, and he's taught me things so clear that I understand the steps now and how they've changed my life. So I start doing the steps with him, because you know what, Christine's way wasn't working, and you know it was. I hadn't been to jail. I hadn't been to treatment. You know, and it prevented me for a lot of reasons for not thinking I was alcoholic. But I understand now that it's not. It doesn't matter. You know, what car you drive, where you're from, the color of your skin, anything. It's like, you know what? I have a problem with my mind and my body. And, you know, I was in Atlanta for AA's 80th celebration in July. And it was never so clear to me that I'm sitting with 65,000 people from all over the world just like me. You know, it's kind of eerie. Like, we're so much alike. We're so much alike. You know, I can sit here and talk to anybody and they know exactly where I'm coming from. And I talk to my husband, who's not an alcoholic, and goes, I don't understand. You know, he doesn't understand. So I start doing the steps and it's like, okay, so step one, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol. And I'm like, okay, I'm powerless. I know that. It's like, no, Christine, it means you don't have the power. And I'm like, wait, well, I don't have the power to stop drinking. My husband doesn't have the power to help me stop drinking. My kids, I wouldn't do it for them, right? So I don't have the power, so I'm powerless. And my life's unmanageable. So I'm not a mother, I'm not a sister, I can't pay bills. I don't make it anywhere on time. Somebody asks me to do something and I'm, yeah, I'll be there, and then I don't show up. And that was me, unmanageable. And but I know now that step one's the problem. And I never knew what the problem was. So I have a solution, though. And that's step two and three. So steps two and three are a higher power, which the big book, the whole book was written about spiritual principles and a higher power, the concept of a higher power. And it's not God, it's spirituality. Because I didn't have God in my life when I first came in here. Apparently, my sponsor said, you know what, Christine, what brought you to the AA meeting? It was my heart, because it wasn't my thinking. And I was like, oh, okay, what do you mean by that? And it's because it says it like five times in the big book. Inner resource, our creator, is in our heart. And it says it in the big book. So it doesn't say who God is, but it says where God is. And you know, the whole time I'm not drinking. My problem's my thinking. That's the problem, but I also have the solution with me, which is my heart. And I never knew that concept. I'm out there looking for God, you know. And for me, it was in a bigger house. It was in a boat, you know. I'm going to be happy. And I was still so empty, so empty. I was looking for it on the outside, and I didn't realize it's actually an inside job. So step two, which is I come to believe. It's not like, Christine, you will believe. It's like you come to believe. So I just came to the meetings, you know, and I started listening and you know, took the cotton balls out and turned the receivers on and actually started listening to what people had to say. And, you know, you guys are pretty smart. I started liking people, going, maybe they know something, you know. And step three was turning my will over to something else. And it's like, okay. So it's like, it was described to me what step one, two, and three is. So step one is the letter H, which is how, and which is how it works. So honesty is step one. Step two is open-mindedness, so that's O. And step three is willing. So when I hear now how it works, I know I have to be honest, open-minded, and willing. And I wasn't any of those things when I first came in. So I get honest. I'm open-minded. I'm willing to accept that there's something greater than me out there. And otherwise, I'd probably be dead. And then I'm willing. I'm just willing to say, okay, you know what? Stop running the show. And it says that in the big book, too. It's like, I need to stop running everything. Because I was running everything. You know, my life, I was trying to run my kids, my husband's. I was trying to run your life, you know, telling you guys what to do. But so what's really cool is it's a program of recovery and action. And step 4 to 9 are the action steps. So it's kind of like, you know, going to the gym, and the meetings are the gym. And, you know, if I never pick up a weight, I'm never going to get any results. So I come to meetings and I start to do the action steps, which is like picking up a weight. So 4 to 9, and it's like, oh my God, I'm so afraid now, because I'm like, I have to have a look at me. Like, what do you mean I have to have a look at me? And it says it. It's like, so we resolutely look at our own mistakes. And I didn't know I was the problem, because all of you were the problem. I blamed everybody in my life. You know, my dad for leaving. You know, my mom for being so mean to me. My brothers for beating me up. You know, I blamed everybody. And it's like, what do you mean I'm the problem? Well, so step 4 is about putting things on paper and just having a look at it in front of me. And so, you know, it talks about resentments, fears, sex conduct, and harms to others. And I'm like, okay, so my sponsor has a format, and he has a website, and I follow what he has, and it says I'm only allowed 25 resentments. I'm like, 25? How's that possible? You know, I have thousands on my husband alone. And it's like, sorry, dear. But it really doesn't matter, because a resentment has absolutely nothing to do with the other person. It has absolutely everything to do with me. And I didn't know that. It's because it's my reaction to what people or things in life happen to me. And it's how I react. And so I have the resentments, and I say, how does it affect, you know, or what did they do? So my dad, he left. What did it? He abandoned me as a kid. That was what I thought. And what did it affect? Well, it affected my self-esteem, you know, my pride, you know. But it's where we resolutely look at our mistakes. Is in the big book, it says our mistakes were selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and frightened. But my sponsor has another column, and that's my defects of character. So when we're going through on step 5 and I'm sharing it, so my dad abandoned me, this is what happened, and I was fearful that because he left, and I was selfish. It's like, how dare you leave? But then what are my pattern? What are my behaviors? Well, it's like I'm angry. I'm avoidant. You know, I don't communicate what he did to me. You know, I'm hurt. And every resentment I go through, I see a pattern. And all of a sudden, I start seeing that I don't communicate, I'm angry, I'm self-loathing. The next thing, you know, I'm frightened. Like, they just keep coming up. And so that's my inventory. I'm like, I had no idea. I had no idea that this was Christine. I had no idea that I didn't communicate. I was avoidant. I was judgmental. I was always angry. I was frightened, you know. So when I do my step 6, my higher power wants me on the other side of all my character defects. So if I'm dishonest, he wants me honest. If I'm jealous, he wants me loving. You know, if I'm judgmental, I have to be tolerant. You know, so, and all these things take time, and I didn't realize, but it's like, so now I'm in the solution, and I'm in action, and it's like, wow. So I have to do a little collage, and it's like a course that I'm taking, and it's actually fun. I'm actually having fun, because when I first did my first sponsors, and I love them so much, they taught me certain things, but I didn't understand when somebody said read the big book. I had no idea. Start reading, and I'm like, you may as well have said build an airplane, because I had no idea. I had no idea. So my sponsor's website gives me like Cole's Notes versions of. Like if I were highlighting in my big book, and it just helps me understand the concept of the steps, and it's kind of like a reverse psychology, because my thinking's the problem, and so I've turned my will over to higher power, and it's going to direct me. But you know what? I need to change my behavior. So I work on being honest. You know, I work on being loving, and I stop judging people, and you know. It starts to happen, and I can't really explain how. It says it in the back of the big book, too. It talks about a spiritual experience, and it says, you know, as we go through the steps, we have little spiritual experiences, and we're changing. We can feel that pull. And we got to keep going through. And then as a result of doing the 12 steps, we have that spiritual awakening. And that's that psychic change. And I kid you not, I am not the same person I was 3 years ago, because I couldn't talk to people. I would sit there and watch somebody have a conversation, and I'd be like, how do they do that? I had no idea. I had no idea. So AA and the steps have taught me so much. You know, they've taught me public speaking, how to love myself, you know, how to live life and sober. And I'm just so grateful for that, because I had no idea how to live. I had no idea. So it's cool, because I start going through the steps. I keep going. So step 7, I have to do this collage. And the collage is like, it's affirmations. It's just positivity, because Christine is so negative. So I have these affirmations, and it's, I do a collage, and I have honest, tolerant, loving. I do this pretty thing, and I post it everywhere. And so every morning I have to, I have to be tolerant. Oh, I have to be loving. I have to be caring, you know. And so I'm just reminding myself all the time. And then step 8 and 9. So step, I wanted to go back to fears. Fears, I kind of jumped a little bit. But so the resentments and the fears and the sex conduct and the harms to others. So the fears, I have to list, I think it was only 10 fears that I could list. And, I was afraid of everything. But there's always a solution. So if I'm afraid of swimming, I either don't go near water or I take swimming lessons. Like, I always have to be in a solution. There's always a solution. I no longer stay in the problem anymore. So, you know, I'm afraid of being poor. I'm afraid of being, alone, So I surround myself with caring, loving people. I'm afraid of being poor. I always try and make sure I have a job, So I'm always looking for a solution nowadays. And, the sex conduct was a tough one too, because, there's people that I hurt, and I did hurt my husband on numerous occasions. And So I go through and I own up to it, but I don't make amends to those people, because I'm not trying to rekindle anything. I'm just looking at what my part was in everything. And the harms, it's just all my resentments come over to the harms list. And then I add a few extra if I stole money or I stole their cell phone or whatever, And then from those lists, I get my step 8, which is, I have to say I'm sorry. But I've said I'm sorry so many times that it doesn't matter anymore. It's like, I have to right the wrong. So I have to fix things. And what that means now to me is that, I'm wrong to some people face to face, and there's some people I can't do face to face. And it's like my mom and my brothers, they haven't talked to me in over 20 years. So, I try to send them cards, and I try to open that door a little bit, and I'm willing to make amends, but not everybody will accept my apology. And and that's okay. That's okay. It's not always easy, but it's okay. And, but there's different amends. So it's like amends is about change. So I change my behavior. I don't do it anymore. And I do make those amends. But I have to be very careful when I make amends. I have to check with my sponsor, because, if I say to somebody, I'm doing my step 9 and I'm in AA and it happened. And they said, you know what, you can take your AA and screw it. Screw off, because I'm still drinking. And it's like, so I don't bring AA into it, because AA has really nothing to do with it. It's my part. I'm trying to clean up my side of the street. And I'm trying to fix things that I did. And, it is a journey, and it's not always easy, but it's something that needs to be done. And it's pretty much just cleaning up my past. So I own everything that I did for 50 years. Almost 50 years. But I learn from it. I own it. I learn from it. But I can leave it. And there's still a few amends I have to make. My dad's passed away, so I did a letter to him. And he's buried in Australia, so I won't get any chance to see him. But he's with me every day. And I used to be so upset that he died and I wasn't sober. And you know what? I'm grateful for the time now. I flip it. I'm grateful for the time I spent with him when I had the time when I was younger, and not upset for the time that I don't have with them, you know. So, you know, steps 10, 11, 12 are what's left, and that's daily, and that's living the steps. So step 10 is my daily inventory. So all day long I'm in check. I make sure that it's not one kind act. I have to do it all day long. So I have to hold the door open for somebody. I have to help somebody with their groceries, you know. And then page 86 in the big book is when I retire at night. And I just do a little quick check of 9 questions, like, how did Christine do today? You know, was I loving, caring? Was I tolerant? You know, and then step 11 is prayer and meditation. And prayer is easy for me because there's always God 911. Please help me. I'll do anything, you know. And but it's not like that anymore. Now I wake up in the morning, it's God direct my thinking, because if it's Christine direct my thinking, it's going to be a really bad day. So God direct my thinking, thy will be done, not my will be done. And, you know, life's a lot better. And so what that means for me is I just don't control everything anymore, and I let things go. And, you know, my kids are so much happier without mom telling them what to do and who to date and, you know, not to ride the motorcycle and do, it's just, you know, just let them live. And so, you know, back to my husband. My husband's still with me, and you know what? The steps have taught me love and respect. And I had to take the label husband off him, because I could be nice to all of you and I'd go home and I'd just trash him, you know, wouldn't be nice to him. And so I have to treat him like any other human being with love and respect. And it's amazing when I start to do that to anybody, how I get it back. So, you know, and then step 12, the meditation, I look at it now, it's like just listening to God. And if I listen to anybody in this room and what they have to say to me, that's God speaking to me through people. And if I just take the time to listen to what you have to say, I might actually learn something. And my world gets a lot bigger because I connect to you and then you connect me with somebody. And it's just, it's amazing because, you know, 3 years ago it was just me in my closet drinking with my dog, you know. And so on the questions like, Christine, did you drink alone? It's like, no, I drank with my dog. You know, I can manipulate anything. So, and then step 12 is my greatest gift. I have a lot of people I help today. And never, ever did I think I would do that. So I'm thinking step 12 was made for me, because my kids are an alcoholic and they help people regardless. They give rides, they, you know, help out, they help people move. And it's like for Christine, it's like, I have to do what? So it's for me to, it's like, Christine, you have to help others to stay sober. And I used to laugh about that. It's like, but you know what? I have a few women that, you know, I call them sponsees, but it's more, I walk with them. I help them through the steps. And, you know, there's some people that have sponsees that just need something different, or have years of sobriety that just want something a little different. So I just do something a little different. I take them through the steps the way I was taught. Because my sponsor lives in Vancouver, so I have a huge Western influence. And they do things way different out in Vancouver. So not to say we're wrong. Not to say we're wrong. It's just I have different things going on in here. And I'm allowed to think now because step 11 says God gave me brains. So I'm allowed to think now. Because before, my sponsor would say, Christine, no thinking. I'm like, what do you mean no thinking? He says, well, I want you to stay in your heart where God is. And I'm like, well, I need to think. But it's attitude and gratitude. So if I'm in gratitude, you know, oh, I have a, you know, a husband beside me, and when I wake up in the morning, or attitude going, oh, friggin' husband snored all night, you know. So it's like the concept is, it's learned. I learned to stay more and more in gratitude, to be grateful for even a rainy day, because before I'd go, it's going to be a shitty day. And I really try to see the beauty in everything now. And, you know, I forgot to tell you, though, but for step 9, the amends, was probably the game changer for me, which was I wasn't allowed to make an amends to anybody until I made the amends to me, myself first. And the reason for that was I hurt Christine. So I'm drinking, I'm not eating, you know, I'm smoking, I'm doing all these things. So I actually hurt Christine. And so I have to say I'm sorry. And I do have another piece of paper. And at the top it says, Christine, you're beautiful, because I never thought I was. And I say, love Christine, love my husband, love all my kids, love God, love AA. And it's just, my whole life is full of love now. And you kind of say, well, what does love have to do with sobriety? And it has everything to do with sobriety. Because the 12 steps will, they teach me to love me. They teach me to love you. And you know what, though? It also teaches me that not everybody will love me. And that's okay. Because I was always searching for everybody to love me. And you know, now I love myself. And I do love all of you. Because if I don't love you, then I don't like you. And if I don't like you, I probably have a resentment. And if I have a resentment, it's the number one thing that will send me back out. It'll send me right back to the spiritual malady that it talks about in the big book, that I'm restless, irritable, and discontent until I find that first drink. And I never want to be there. I never want to be there. And you know what? If I'm spiritually okay today, my sponsor's like, Christine, are you going to drink today? And it's like, nope. And it's like, why? Well, it's because I'm spiritually okay. I'm plugged in. It's just like my cell phone. I got to plug in every day. I plug in the morning. I say a few prayers. I don't go long, but, you know, and I kind of say serenity prayer throughout the day. I'm plugged in like my cell phone. Because if I'm not plugged in, it's going to die too. And when I'm not spiritually okay, I'm back in here in attitude and in my head. And this isn't a good place for me. I start thinking again, and all these bad thoughts come to me. And then something just happens as simple as my shoelace breaks. And I say, screw it. And I pick up a drink. Because it's just right there. It's just right there, you know. And I only have a daily reprieve. Like Richard was telling me, he's got 12 years. I'm like, oh my God, when I remember first coming in, how do I do that? 12 years, it's like, well, it's just one day at a time. Just plus, 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 just adding up. I only have a daily reprieve contingent upon my spirituality, right? So anybody new, you know, I just encourage you not to do, you know, your own thing. It's like if it's suggested, it's there for a reason, because it's been done by millions of people, you know, and who actually stay sober, but not just sober, have sobriety. And that's the difference of being happy, because I know there's people that have years of not drinking, but they're not happy. And, you know, it's just not a good place to be. It's, you know, for me, I do a lot of meetings and talk with a lot of people. And it's like, I just encourage you to go to meetings, which is fellowship. The recovery is the steps. So do the steps. And you know, ask questions. There's never a stupid question. Ever, ever, ever. It's because, you know, there are things in the big one, like don't rest on your laurels, or, you know, I'm like, what does that mean? You know, it's like, you got to ask questions to understand. And give yourself a chance. Because, you know, I do a lot of meetings at detox. And it's amazing because it's like ground zero. We know we have a problem. But there's a solution. And it's like, we're all beautiful people. And we just make wrong choices. You know, and there's this road all along that I had. And, you know, I get distracted really easy. So off the road I go and I do my own thing. And, you know, AA keeps me on this road right here, you know. And it keeps me safe. It keeps me in my heart. It keeps me loving you guys. And my life has changed so much, so much. And, George, thank you so much for being the backup. Really appreciate it. And I love you guys all so much, really, truly. Thank you for my sobriety. Thank you.